How's everyone? This is Lina Live. I'm your host, Lina Mirmond, and I'm very much privileged to have extraordinarily interesting guest. His name is Dr. Joseph Kay. The reason I said that it is a great privilege of mine, because Dr. Kay, even though has tremendous amount of accomplishments in the world of medicine, and I will mention them in a second, but mostly important, he extended his knowledge, interest, practice, and will share with us the most relevant and deeply important side of a medicine, side which human beings are so craving to know about. And this is certain aspect of alternative medicine, which has to do with bioidentical hormones. We also will be talking about some ideas of food, some preventative measures, and many more other issues which one program cannot possibly consume, but we will try. Dr. Kay, welcome. How are you? Thank you for joining us. And before I will ask my first question, I just wanted to thank you for finding your time and to be part of this program.
Well, thank you, Lina. I'm happy to be here.
I would start with just a brief and hardly complete list of your accomplishments. You being connected to Jefferson Medical School, where you probably got your basic and most relevant foundation for the medicine. Then
yeah,
you, if I'm correct, then what is frankly was astonishing to me that in addition to be board certified in internal medicine, emergency care, you practice a specialized integrative and holistic internal medicine. And that will be the focus of this program. But I like to mention on a side, which is quite important on its own, that you also complete a surgery internship. So you really know tissue of the issue from every possible angle of human life. And I would say that even though there is absolutely huge world of your knowledge and experience, I was thinking that we can perhaps divide this program on two parts, as a big picture where you can talk to us about these bioidentical hormones, perhaps with a connection with food and some preventive care. Also, of course, with the difference between bioidentical and non-bioidentical hormones. So as a big picture base for that. But then I would be very anxiously learning from you, as well as all our listeners, about specific problems. Because a lot of us have chronic conditions, and they literally hit a dead wall with regular medicine. And therefore, we're very much eager to learn from you how we can address those chronic conditions, diseases, with your knowledge and with your help. During course of this program, we will certainly announce web page of Dr. Kay. And in advance, I wanted to say that people in Massachusetts, especially very lucky one, truly lucky one, because Dr. Kay has his practice in Woburn, Massachusetts, which you will find on his website. And therefore, I would strongly recommend after this program to go on his website to continue learning about his practice. And people who are in the East Coast, in New England, can directly be one of the patients of Dr. K, who already had about 15,000 patients. Dr. K, that's just very modest introduction of yours, and I should say about you, introduction of mine about you. And I like to ask a first question about BHRT, which is an abbreviation for bioidentical hormones. If you can give us a picture about this and just tell us what it is.
Well, sure, Lena, and thank you for that really, really nice introduction. And I would also point out with respect to the website, I have two websites. One is Optimal Wellness MD, just as it's spelled, Optimal Wellness MD, and the other is Body Logic MD. And Body Logic MD is the name of the medical group of which I'm a part, and it's about 50 practices around the country. It's the largest group of doctors that specialize in both bioidentical hormones and age management and the treatment of these chronic conditions using what we call functional medicine. And that includes nutrition and hormones and detoxification and fitness and so forth. But back to your question, what is BHRT? What are bioidentical hormones? I always tell my patients that bioidentical hormones are the exact same hormones that your body makes when you're younger. They are identical. Bio means life. Identical, of course, means identical. So identical to what you find in a living, breathing human without any changes at all. So, you know, in the case of a woman, we're talking about three types of estrogens. One is estrone, one is estradiol, and one is estriol. We're talking about testosterone, dihydrotestosterone. We're talking about progesterone. And there are many others. Thyroid hormones could be considered bioidentical hormones, and so on. And in men, we're also looking at testosterone, dihydrotestosterone, estradiol, estrone. Estriol is not usually found in men, and that's not an issue. So the bottom line is these are identical to what your body normally makes. Now, for one reason or another, many people have deficiencies of these hormones, particularly as they age, or perhaps after surgery. In a woman, if you've had a hysterectomy and your ovaries have been removed, then you will have a complete deficiency of most of these hormones, or at least a severe deficiency of estrogen and progesterone and testosterone and so forth. At menopause, the same condition will happen. You'll have a deficiency of estrogen, progesterone, testosterone. In men, as they age, testosterone definitely declines with age. And at some point, you'll reach a state which we call andropause, which is essentially your male equivalent of menopause, perhaps. Not as abrupt, but certainly a real condition where you just don't have enough testosterone to feel good and function well. So that's essentially what bioidentical hormones are. Now, I would contrast them with non-bioidentical hormones. Now, non-bioidentical hormones means hormones that are not normally found in a living human. Okay? These are either from an animal, such as a horse, in other words, the medication Premarin, or they are, as my colleague Jonathan Wright would say, space alien molecules, meaning they don't exist in nature, in an animal or a human. They're made in a laboratory somewhere in a drug company and modified primarily so they can be patented and then put in a pill form. So in this group, we would consider things like Provera, which is what we call a progestin. This is not progesterone. It is a different chemical entirely, but it's commonly used by many doctors who are not aware of the difference as a substitute for progesterone and has many serious side effects. So that's a non-bioidentical hormone.
And
go ahead.
I will interject one thing, frankly, I would not apologize for interrupting you because thoughts are coming with your very, very clear explanation. I like to interject one thing. It is very unfortunately that pharmaceutical companies have such power of business that they have tremendous abilities to promote those non-bioidentical hormones. They not only influence doctors, but they actually pay them to use them. And over, I don't know, last of a decade, that was such a controversial results from hope to scare with increased cancer, with other damage, with no help for osteoporosis, all bouquet of problems really being discovered with this non-bioidentical hormones, which you are talking about. And I just wasn't sure the degree of your tactfulness and if you will indeed criticize this pharmaceutical industry who is preventing from indeed developing these bioidentical hormones. I just wanted to interject that.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Lena. You know, there are certainly, you know, differences of opinion among physicians on whether bioidentical hormones offer an advantage over the conventional forms of HRT, which are generally the synthetics. I personally feel that the bioidenticals offer me far more flexibility in dosing and treatment than do many of the brand name products. You know, one of the problems with the pharmaceutical system that we have today is that if a hormone or even a chemical is found in nature, you can't patent it. And, of course, any company that's going to spend money purifying a compound and producing it in a, you know, in a form that can be sold needs a return on their investment. And so even though they may understand full well the science behind this and realize that bioidentical progesterone or bioidentical estrogens are superior in how they function in the human body, they can't reliably patent these hormones. So they are very reluctant to promote them. There are a few exceptions. For example, Vivel and Clymera are brand name forms of estradiol. But what they're patenting there is not the actual hormone. They're patenting the patch and the delivery system because, you know, they can control that. And even though any drug company or a generic drug company can make estradiol and sell it, and the, you know, the first company that used it can't stop them, they can't copy the patch. And since that's the unique part of the product, they can still make money. So I think it really does come down just to money. If they can make money using a bioidentical as a product, then they're willing to do so. But those are only a few cases. For most of the bioidentical hormones, they are not they're not making much of an effort to promote them. The other issue is they really can't combine hormones in their products. So when you get an estradiol patch, it only has estradiol. But in a normal woman, as I mentioned, you have three circulating estrogens. Well, are the others important? I think they are. There are some good studies that show that estriol is preventative against breast cancer. And it actually acts in a separate receptor than estradiol and estrone. So I think it's important to include estriol in bioidentical hormone replacement. But you can't get estriol as a pharmaceutical product. You can only get it in a compounded form from a specialty pharmacy and prescribed by a doctor such as myself. So that's an issue. And then another issue is dosing. You know, every woman is different, and when I dose hormones, I check tests using saliva or blood, and I monitor these levels very carefully. And I've found that I often have to adjust the doses by very small amounts to get the optimum effect. Well, you know, the pharmaceutical products are produced at a certain dose, and you can only choose from the doses that are coming from the manufacturer. And so if it's sort of a one-size-fits-all approach. If you happen to do well on that product, great. But if you don't, there's really not too much you can do about it. You just have to either take a dose that's too low for you or a dose that's a little too high. I've even heard stories of women cutting the patches in half and gluing half a patch next to a full patch, you know, trying to regulate their levels that way. But that's really so crude. We can totally customize the dosing of all the hormones. And I've mixed as many as five different bioidentical hormones into one cream just so that a woman can apply it once and that's it for the whole day instead of having to take all sorts of other things. So there are a lot of advantages to using the bioidenticals. And there are a few issues with the brand name products.
I'm so glad that you already started to describe your approach because I like to go into the process of your treatment. Prior to that, I like to ask you so many questions, so I just have to keep myself at bay, so we will have certain logical consequences. But I just wanted to say, just hearing your say now, frankly, bioidentical should be the medicine to go, the approach. It should be a prime medicine. And only if that does not work, complement this or supplement this with a regular, what they call regular medicine, pharmaceutical. Because indeed, what you described already is so much more natural, so much more closer to the wisdom of our bodies rather than other very definable quantity of the medical composition, but could be very, very far away from what an individual needs. So it's just very unfortunate that we go somewhat with the obstacles for something which we need so greatly. I like to ask you this question. We women live in fear. Whoever can afford $4,000 for testing for this breast cancer gene perhaps can either know the truth or just being reassured. But general population live with this fear, with this late discovery of that, not late discovery, but late approach towards this gene. And I want to ask you two questions. One leads to another. Number one, are you approving of double mastectomy? And another question, do you think women should know?
Well, I think the decision to have a surgery is, you know, really a personal one that a woman would have to have with her physician. You know, you have to take into account a lot of things, you know, the odds of developing cancer, her family history, you know, how well she can be monitored, how willing she is to undergo biopsies and so forth, and get mammograms or MRIs. So I think the decision really has to be individualized. You know, in my practice, I'm a big believer in the more information you have, the better, regardless of what it is. So although I don't generally test for this routinely, I'm certainly in favor of ordering a number of tests that can stratify whether a woman has an increased risk for developing breast cancer, aside from the BRCA gene, which is what you're referring to. The problem with this gene is that the statistics say about 60% of women who have the BRCA1 gene will develop breast cancer by age 70. And They also have a much greater rate of ovarian cancer. About 40% will develop ovarian cancer by age 70. You know, there's another gene, BRCA2, which also increases your risk for both cancers. But that's not a 100% risk. So, and 70 is a pretty old age. So do you want to have a mastectomy at, you know, 30 if you have this gene? You know, these have to be, these are things that you really have to talk to your physician about. I can't give a blanket endorsement of that. I would like to use that, though, as a topic that I can talk a little bit about in terms of what we do here at our office. There is a, the BRCA gene is only a small percentage of the women who actually develop breast cancer. If you have it, it's a significant thing. But if you don't have the BRCA gene, you still are at fairly, you can still be at a fairly high risk of getting breast cancer. And I would say that most physicians would say, well, we don't really know why that is. And I would say, yes, we do know why that is. And it has a lot to do with how a woman is processing the estrogen in her body. The estrogen could be coming from her own ovaries, or it could be coming from hormone replacement. And we can test for this. It's a very cheap urine test. I know the BRCA gene is very expensive. It's thousands of dollars, although that will probably be getting a lot cheaper now that a court case has ruled that they cannot patent that gene. So basically any lab can now test for that. But up until now, it's been very expensive and cost prohibitive for many women. But in the office, we do a urine test, and what it looks at is the ratio, what we call the 2:16 ratio. And if anybody wants to know the name of this test, there are a number of laboratories that do it, but one of them is Metametrics, and it's called Estronex, Estronex. Suzanne Summers advocates this test, and we use this in the office. What it tells you is what is this 2:16 ratio. And, you know, the literature and the scientific literature shows that the higher this ratio is, the lower your risk is to develop breast cancer. And that's because the 2 refers to one of the breakdown products of estrogen called 2-hydroxyestrone, which is converted to 2-methoxyestrone, which is actually a natural anti-cancer hormone. In the lab, it can actually kill cancer cells. So the more of this you make, the lower your risk of breast cancer. On the contrary, if you make a lot of 16-hydroxyestrone, that one actually is pro-cancer, and meaning it will actually turn into a compound that damages the genes and creates mutations, and those mutations can lead to genetic errors and eventually cancer. Well, wouldn't you know that Premarin has hormones in it that activate that 16 pathway. And we know that women who take Premarin are at a much higher risk of breast cancer, as are some of these synthetic hormones. The natural bioidenticals can also go into the 16 pathway. But if you do some relatively simple things, you can push them towards the 2. And those simple things are things that we would recommend for all women. One is eat your broccoli. Broccoli has a compound in it called DIM, or I3C, and that has been shown to be a very powerful inhibitor of breast cancer. Very, very powerful. The more broccoli you eat, the more I3C or DIM you get, and the more 2-hydroxyestrone you make, which is anti-cancer. Taking your fish oil also helps move things in that direction. Treating your thyroid, if you're hypothyroid, helps move things into the 2. Herbs like rosemary. You know, there are a lot of ways you can intervene here and improve your likelihood of developing, reduce your likelihood of developing breast cancer. But you have to do some testing first to know what the issue is. I think that test is about $75. It's very reasonable. And I do that routinely on any woman who's been getting bioidentical hormones in this office.
you already quite a bit into the way you're treating people, and this is certainly, I do not want to say it's reassurance. However, yes, it is, because any clarity is so important, and reassurance in the sense that you can really see what is going on before something really will be going on is extremely reassuring. And I'll be surprised if you will not have about 1,000 of patients tomorrow waiting for your office just to have this test. And I'm sorry, it will be just the women. but it's extremely encouraging that you can really give people certain knowledge of what's going on and take this preventive step. I like to make one connection. There is a bit of a frustration on the part of people who are indeed conscious of their health, and even though they're still not experiencing bioidentical treatment or bioidentical connection, they have certain issues, and I like to talk about them. As I mentioned before, we're trying to have this program on two scales, one a big picture and some of them a smaller picture regarding certain specific issues. Before we'll go to this, I wanted to say that this program is with Dr. Joseph Kay, who has not only knowledge in traditional medicine, but extended his intuition, in a sense, then his tremendous experience, his very deep understanding of physiology and anatomy of a human body, which allowed him to practice this relatively new way of helping us, not only women, but the men as well. We will talk about the men a little later. Dr. Kay, as I said before, locating in Woburn, Massachusetts. We will ask Dr. Kay in a second to tell us about his website. And after that, I'd like to proceed with a few specific questions, especially regarding your comment about broccolis. Dr. Kay, if you can just tell us again, if listeners just joined us, where they can find you and what is your website?
Sure, Lena. My website, I have two websites, as I mentioned. The first is www.bodylogicmd.com, BODYLOGICMD.com. That is the website for the medical group of which I am a part. It's a national group of about 50 practices. We take care of about 30,000 patients, and we're all board certified, some endocrinology, some internal medicine, such as myself, some OB-gynecology. And we've all taken training in addition to our normal medical training and residency. We've all completed a fellowship in anti-aging and functional medicine, and that's where you learn all these complementary medical techniques. I would also say that I have a second website called www.optimalwellnessmd. It's spelled exactly as I said it, optimalwellnessmd, no spaces. And that's my specific office website where I have a blog where you can read about a lot of issues that we probably won't have time to talk about, such as autoimmune disease and weight loss. We do a really effective weight loss program here. As well as hormone therapy and testing and so forth. So we have Body Logic MD and Optimal Wellness MD. We're located in Woburn, Massachusetts. It's 10 miles north of Boston, right at the intersection of Highway 95 and 93. And, you know, we are open Monday through Thursday, and we're fairly busy, but we always like to meet new patients. And I see patients from all over the United States, actually, and some in Europe, but most probably in New England and especially Massachusetts and Rhode Island. So that's the office number, if you'd like it, is 781-933-4200. But I'm on that line at the moment, so you'll have to wait until the end of the program to call. Again, it's 781-933-4200. Okay.
Thank you for this very comprehensive description where we can find you. I will go on with your last comment regarding your thyroid. There are obviously issues with each hormone. It has to be measured, and according to the measurement, you will adapt certain dose of those bioidentical hormones. Let me ask you about thyroid. This is something which immediately hit my attention when you mentioned, because unfortunately, cabbage group is not very good for the thyroid. For the condition where thyroid, speaking in a very simple language, is very sluggish, working too hard, and not effective. And as a result, people developing just a number of very debilitating, I should say, side effects, and lists going on from weakness, to cold hands, constipation, depression, because it's such a one of the key hormone in our body. So if we can start from that smaller issue, maybe it's not that small, how can I have broccoli, not particularly specifically myself, even though indeed I have to attend my thyroid as well. How can I measure or be wise of using cabbage family with the benefits for prevention of cancer and not to harm my thyroid?
Okay, so the compound in, I guess, the cruciferous family, including cabbage, that we are talking about is called indole-3-carbinol, or I3C. And when it encounters the acid in your stomach, it's turned into DIM, also known as DIM. And that is the chemical that pushes the estrone into the 2-hydroxy pathway, which reduces your risk for breast cancer. You can take that as a supplement. That's not the part that affects your thyroid. So if eating cabbage is a concern, you can just, you know, take the actual compound. And I would actually recommend that people take that as a supplement. The reason is you just can't eat enough cabbage and broccoli to get the quantity of I3C and DIM that you need to, you know, to modify this estrogen processing in your body. So taking, you know, one tablet of DIM or I3C is probably the best way to go, and then just eat your moderate amount of vegetables, including cruciferous, as you would normally. You don't want to just overdose on cruciferous, because then you can actually inhibit production of thyroid hormone.
So it is somewhat clear, but if I can ask you kindly to clarify it. So in order to get benefits against protection against cancer, you're suggesting to take this compound I3C. So once it's taken, then one can continue eating this cabbage family?
Yeah. I don't think there's any good data to support this notion that cabbage or cruciferous vegetables can inhibit thyroid function. It's really anecdotal, meaning it's people say these things.
Okay.
But, you know, there are some studies that show soy can inhibit thyroid function, but if you look, you really don't find many articles, if any, on cabbage, although it is definitely all over the Internet. I encourage people to eat cruciferous vegetables. They are full of vitamins. They're full of antioxidants. you know, they have other compounds besides I3C that are anti-cancer. So I think, you know, they're very important. I don't want people to stop eating these vegetables because they're trying to protect their thyroid. There are plenty of other things in the environment that are more dangerous to your thyroid. So okay. I would just eat a normal amount of these vegetables, and if you're taking hormones or if you have a family history of breast cancer or if your testing shows that you need to, there's no harm at all in taking this I3C supplement. A lot of companies make it. We use a product called EstroDim, and that's from Orthomolecular, but there are other compounds. It's also made by Metagenics and many other good companies. So that's mm-hmm. how I would approach this. I always think food is good. I encourage people to get as many of their vitamins from food as possible, and then we use supplements to either fill in small deficiencies or supplement if they have a specific health need that requires extra of something, such as this I3C.
So we are all back to at least two cups of we are reuniting with our cabbage family about two cups a day. I think you probably
will approve.
That
sounds fine with me, yes. okay. Or broccoli.
Or broccoli.
I love kale. You know, mm-hmm. I eat a lot of kale myself. And, you know, I think these are one of the better vegetables to eat, actually, in terms of their nutritional value.
And that leads us to another question. Even though I'm dying to ask you questions about the balance of hormones at a certain age after menopause, so forth, but I need to keep a focus on certain issues which are cross-age issues, and one of them is bones. Have to say that this has just been such a terribly controversial issue. First, it was a calcium, which I felt is the most brutal imposition on the body. And I learned, I don't remember from where, but I just read literature. And actually having questions with my own experience, that if you just take calcium and magnesium, it's not very effective because calcium goes where it doesn't need to go and doesn't go where it needs to go. And I wanted to ask you, what is particularly a situation with prevention of lost bones after menopause? So we will not find this when we already having osteoporosis, or we come to the dentist who will say that half of your bone is gone. How would you share with us your wisdom and your experience on this score?
Okay, Lena, this is a thanks for asking that, because this is a conversation I have at least once a day with a patient, and we have a very good protocol. And I have, you know, bone density proof of reversing osteoporosis in women, usually within a year, definitely within two, once they start the program. And we don't need to use the intravenous or oral medications that are commonly prescribed for this, such as Boniva and those sorts of bisphosphonates. Those drugs have some serious side effects, and they're not all that effective, honestly. Studies have shown that although it does increase bone density, the bone doesn't appear to be very strong, and so you actually can get fractures in that bone. So our point is to prevent fractures. So what we really want is natural bone, the kind of bone that your body built when you were a teenager. And my experience in my practice is that by optimizing hormones, by adding weightlifting exercises, and making sure that the right nutrition is part of the plan, and that includes calcium, that includes vitamin D3, that includes vitamin K2, it includes strontium and the other minerals, that we can actually get bone restoration. And so that is kind of the discussion I have. In regards to whether or not to take calcium, you know, the data is not entirely clear on that, actually. There have been a few studies out there that haven't really that have potentially shown some adverse effects of taking calcium pills, possibly some cardiovascular problems, although I will point out those were not good studies, and it certainly is not a conclusion. What I recommend is several things. First, as I mentioned with the broccoli, my great preference is you get your nutrition from food. First, we start with food, and then we supplement if needed, and we supplement with, just as we have bioidentical hormones, we basically have bioidentical supplements as well. In other words, the supplements that contain the mineral or vitamin in the form that it's actually found in nature, not in the form that's made by a drug company or a chemistry lab that's cheap. We want the real ingredient. And in the case of calcium, what we're talking about is something called calcium hydroxyapatite. And that is the calcium that's found in bone. It's not the calcium that's found in chalk in the ground, which is a rock. It's not the calcium that's found in oyster shells. It's not in coral. It's the calcium that's in your bone. And you can get this calcium in the form of a capsule, and it's made from the bones of organically grown cows in New Zealand that are sterilized and purified, and so all you're getting is just the mineral part. But that substance has all the minerals and calcium in it that your bone needs to rebuild itself. And it's in a form your body can digest and use because your stomach is designed to get calcium from meat and bones. You know, if you think about it, 50,000 years ago in the Paleolithic time, and I am an advocate of the paleo diet, we didn't have calcium supplements. We didn't have vitamin supplements, yet somehow people survived. The reason they survived is because they were eating the right kind of a diet. Well, first we try and reproduce that diet. There are a lot of food sources that are excellent sources of calcium. One of them is those cruciferous vegetables that we just mentioned, such as broccoli and kale and cabbage. Another one is fish with the bones in it, such as salmon. You know, meats have a fair amount of calcium in them. Every cell in the body has calcium, including animal meat. And so if you eat, and then, of course, dairy has calcium, but I don't advocate eating dairy. So we're going to scratch that one for the most people anyhow. So a supplement of calcium hydroxyapatite is a good idea. The next big piece is vitamin D3. Vitamin D3 is critical to absorb calcium. If you don't have enough D3, even though you eat it, it's not going to get absorbed. So we always give vitamin D3 in this practice to everybody, man or woman. And it may surprise you that based on blood testing, we need about 2,000 to 5,000 units a day of D3 to get people's blood levels over 50. And the optimal range is 50 to 100. Average patient that I see here who's not taking any D3 supplementation here in Massachusetts is probably about 15 to 20. And that's because we don't get enough sunlight. And vitamin D is made in your skin when you're exposed to ultraviolet light. In other words, if you can get a sunburn, the sun was strong enough to make some vitamin D in your skin. We don't get a lot of sun up here in Massachusetts, and when we do, we put on the sunblock, so we eliminate our ability to make vitamin D. So everyone here is basically vitamin D deficient, and so we put everybody on vitamin D. And a compound that's only been, you know, recently recognized as important is vitamin K2. Vitamin K2 basically tells your body not to put the calcium in your arteries and muscles where you don't want it, but to put it in the bone where you do want it. So we always use a product which is a mix of vitamin D3 and vitamin K2. You know, talking about other minerals, you need magnesium and phosphorus and strontium. And we have products that contain all of these. So, you know, we optimize nutrition, we optimize hormones, and then you have to use your bones in order to grow them. That means you have to go to the gym and start lifting weights, probably with a trainer, with focus on the large bones, like doing squats and things like that. And that approach actually works, and there's great literature out there showing that the bioidentical hormones do rebuild bone. They're not promoted as much for this purpose because because of the fear by many physicians that women might develop breast cancer or ovarian cancer, or the thought that the pharmaceutical drugs may be better at rebuilding bone. But as I've explained, the bone is often quite brittle, and it's really not better. So I think the bioidenticals are the best choice for preventing osteopenia and restoring bone. And I think that kind of covers what we do with osteoporosis and osteopenia.
It certainly does enrich our brain and our intelligence with what you just described. I certainly am saddened by the fact that our time is coming to the end. I would be very cautiously imposing if at some point we can ask you to come back and to continue this conversation. I like to spend remaining time on certain practical issues, how one can be clearly advised on a practical financial matter. It is very unfortunate reality that even though we pay through the roof our premiums regarding insurance coverage, we really don't get what we need. And you have what we need and what we want. The question is if we can afford it. I know that absolutely rightfully so, you off the HMO, but at the same time, I like to know, hopefully being encouraged with your answer, how we can get to you, what is the scale of prices, and relatively speaking, is it something not only affordable, but is it any kind of average time frame when one would be tested and know where he or she stands with his or her health?
I'm sorry, I didn't really understand the last question.
The last question was about how it can be affordable. Because I said that, understandably, doctor like yourself will not be part of HMO. And because, as I said, all of us want and need you, but perhaps not everyone can be clear whether one can afford this service and that treatment.
Okay.
The question actually has two parts. Yes, some numbers, so we will have some idea. And also, if you can summarize average time for testing, for all examination
before... Okay, that's
before,
the part I didn't understand, yeah. So
yeah.
In terms of affordability, I mean, you'd be pleasantly surprised. This is, if you can afford a Starbucks coffee every day, you can afford me.
Okay? Wow.
That's really that's what it comes down to. Because, you know, you can get a $3 or $4 Starbucks and you know, especially if you get a whipped one and, you know, the macchiatos and what have you. So
that's really it.
I mean, we it's really a matter of priorities. I mean, where is your priority? Is your priority health and prevention of illness or not? And if it is, I think your best investment, honestly, is in your health. If you're feeling good, and I'm sure many of my patients would agree with this, and they've told me this, if you're feeling good, you can do more at work, you can make more money, you can be more successful in your career, you can be more efficient, and the added income is going to far exceed any cost that you've spent on these programs at my office or a similar doctor. That's how I look at it. And you know, generally when you see a doctor in the BodyLogic network, our prices are probably typical of most doctors who do this kind of work. You're going to spend about $400 to $500 on the initial visit. But that's a visit that may be an hour, and in my case, an hour and a half long. I don't think there are many doctors out there that have 90-minute initial patient visits. And if you actually added up what they charge you for the initial 30-minute visit and multiplied that, they may actually be charging more than we do.
Because most of them spend more time in Starbucks.
You may be right. But the point is, I think this is a very reasonable price. Now, in terms of how people can afford it, well, you're correct. We don't participate in HMOs. There may be some doctors that do. The reason is very simple. They just don't reimburse us for the time we spend with the patient. They don't make a distinction between our practice, where we spend 90 minutes with you, and the HMO doctor, who may not even see you, just has an assistant see you, and may see you for 5 minutes, and then that's it. So we provide a much better quality of care, and real medicine is what I would call it, what medicine ideally is supposed to be, where you sit down with your patient and you get an excellent history and you do the right testing and the patient isn't rushed and you go over diet and you go over lifestyle and many, many topics which your regular doctor will never have time to discuss with you. I think you get a lot from that, and I think for the cost it's very, very reasonable. In terms of what these hormones and supplements can charge cost per month, it really varies based on what you need. You know, if all you need is just a multivitamin and a fish oil and some vitamin D and maybe your I3C and a hormone cream, I think you could probably do this program for maybe $200 a month. And, you know, that's kind of typical probably. And then there are some patients who have a complex chronic medical history and they are going to need more intensive efforts. So it really is an individual decision. But I think that if you can, as I said, if you can afford a Starbucks every day, then maybe you could give up the Starbucks and spend that on something that will actually, you know, add years to your life and improve the quality of your life dramatically. So it's generally affordable for most patients. Now, there are ways, such as a healthcare savings account, to deduct a lot of these visits from pre-tax money. That helps. If you have an insurance plan that's called a PPO, with out-of-network benefits, those will pay for our visits. So those are options. And I would also point out that the BodyLogic network will file claims for you with insurance. So many of our patients who come to us pay for their labs and their visits, and then we file their claims with their insurance, and they get a check. So not everybody, but many of them do, and so that helps a lot, too. So it may not be as expensive as you think. I
certainly wanted to thank you with such a sharp, irresistible parallel between our health and Starbucks, and wanted to tell you that you're leaving us with a very realistic and hopeful note. Frankly, not even to think much, but just to come and to see you and your staff. Only because time is dictating, I want deeply to thank you for such just a fantastic tour and gallery of descriptions. I wanted personally to thank you for what you're practicing. And again, I was very cautious, but if your time will permit, perhaps we will have chapter 2 in our conversation. But for now, I wish you the most of success. I hope at some point we will learn even more. And I hope that as a result of this program, many people will get hope, will get clarity and true foundation for their life. This was just a very memorable program with my guest, Dr. Joseph K. Dr. K., thank you so, so much.
Well, thank you for having me, Lena. I look forward to the next time.
Thank you. And on a final note, here is a little reflection on the musical tale. Few thanks to BBS, with whose help and inspiration, again, I was able to produce this program. I wanted to thank my engineer, Julian Lampert. And until next time, that was Lena Live. And I hope that your time in the summer will be warm, bright, and entertaining.